Summer concert season is almost upon us, and if you're heading out to a country show, it'll be all about the boots. With seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more, Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges. And they ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. You've heard me talk about my dog Tucker a lot on this podcast, and it's hard to imagine our family now without the joy that this little field spaniel has brought to our daily lives. That's when we were approached about advertising Superfood Complete on the show, and I said, well, yes, of course. Actress Katherine Heigl has helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, and she is seeing more and more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Dogs across America, just like my dog Tucker, are trying Superfood Complete and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com. That's BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe today. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. This is the ZabeCast. From the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go. Here we go. Feeling kind of mean. Tuesday, March 12, 2024. Thank you for downloading. Wow, a lot is popping. The tampering period, legal tampering, that is, in the NFL has begun, and we will get to not only Russell Wilson taking a one-year deal for a teensy amount of money in Pittsburgh, but Kirk Cousins breaking the bank yet again by going to the Atlanta Falcons. Plus, much angst in Green Bay with the Packers cutting fan favorite and one of the most productive running backs in franchise history, Aaron Jones, but getting younger and maybe better even in signing Josh Jacobs. More on that in just a second. But first, you can always reach me via email, electronic mail at zabe@yahoo.com. This one from Dave Barry. You got it wrong on Caitlin Clark. Zabe, first off, I am a Caitlin Clark OG. I first started following her when she was a senior at Dowling Catholic in West Des Moines when I saw this video on YouTube. Sends me a link. Don't have time to watch it, but thank you. I put her in the same category as Tiger Woods. I would watch a golf tournament if Tiger was in contention. Otherwise, hell nah. Same with women's college hoops. If Caitlin Clark is playing, I'm there. If not, no way. What do Tiger and Caitlin have in common? Not race. The fact that Caitlyn is white has virtually nothing to do with her appeal.
I disagree.
The fact that she is pretty and non-tatted up is, however, important. Okay. Don't discount. It's okay to be white. There's a lot of people in this country who are white. I still think it's more than 50%, but don't quote me on that. And there's nothing wrong with it. And there's nothing wrong with white people rooting for one of their own, especially in a sport that is dominated by non-white players. Nothing wrong with it. As long as you don't take it too far. As long as you don't say, well, I don't like anyone except for the white players, then that's racist. But just being like, all right, you go, Caitlin. And because she looks like she could be the babysitter next door, not a goddamn thing wrong with that. Anyway, I digress. Back to the email. Clark is also like a combo of Steph Curry and John Stockton. Her passing is also incredible. She is currently leading Division One in assists at almost 9 per game, and that's almost 2 assists better than who's number 2. And she's leading in scoring by almost 5 points per game at 32 points per game. She has led the NCAA in scoring 3 of her 4 years. She was second her junior year. Has led the NCAA Division I in assists 3 out of her 4 years as well. That means in 2 years she has pulled the Nate Archibald by leading the league in scoring and assists. P.S. Daylight savings note real quick. During World War II, they had double daylight savings to save energy, and Hawaii and Arizona do not turn back or forward their clocks. Although in Arizona, the Navajo Nation does observe daylight savings time. Okay, I don't know what I got wrong on Caitlin Clark. I said she was a generational player, but the story is too perfect. The white girl who happens to be straight, and there's nothing wrong with being straight, without tattoos, from Iowa. You know, the perennial small-town story of just... she looks like your babysitter and plays like Jordan with a ponytail. It's a story that is perfect. And while I think there'll be other basketball players Juju Watkins. Juju Watkins is a similar dynamic. But is SC, does it resonate with the rest of the country? You know, the flyover country has a lot of people. And flyover country in the upper Midwest, they consider all Midwesterners kind of like one of their own, kind of part of the family. So that has to be factored in as well. Again, I think it all factors in. Every little bit is an extra little weight on top of the story. This one from Mark Freeman about the morning show podcasts going missing. For many of you who listen to my show on 97.3 The Game on the iHeart podcast platform, you're like, where is this? Mark Freeman says, I know you were on vacation last week, but there was a couple days of the morning show I didn't get posted. I chalked it up to your vacation. Today's show, however, with you back, didn't get posted as well. Am I missing something? Thanks, Mark Freeman. Yes, what you're missing is this. The artists that own the music that we inevitably play as bumpers in and out are now contesting their usage in the podcast format, meaning the recorded recap, or not recap, but the recorded packaged version of these radio shows, of which iHeart has thousands of them. And they're saying, whoa, we didn't get paid anything for that usage. So we are suing for more money. iHeart being one of the top 2 radio groups and digital media groups in the country. And the company is more music focused than many other broadcast conglomerates. They still do sports, obviously. But music is their jam. That's a big, rich target for the artists and their lawyers. And maybe they've got a case. Now, there is something called ASCAP, the American Society of Commercial and... hold on, let me see what ASCAP stands for. American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. Radio stations have struck a deal with ASCAP to pay royalties, blanket bundled royalties to all artists for use of their library, for bump-ins, bump-outs. If we want to play a piece of music for a little silly game we're going to play, we don't have to worry about, oh my God, that's going to cost us money. They have also negotiated with artists ASCAP licensing fees for streaming. So you're listening to your show, listening to my show or someone else's via your computer or your phone, and you're listening to it live. Well, they now say, well, since you recorded it and now it's posted and anyone can download it and listen to it on their leisure, that's another category you're going to have to pay us for. So right now we are sort of trying to scramble to sort this out. I think in the end, they're going to get it sorted out. I don't know if the artists really have a case here. What am I, a lawyer? Didn't stop you in the past trying to be one. Hey, shut up, okay? But that's why the podcasts are not posting. So thank you for downloading and listening to the shows, but you're going to have to listen live now. Life is tough. And then there's this, speaking of podcast challenges, Patrick Hill in the 912 says Scott and Solly gambling and daylight savings. Hello, Steez. Number one, I am with you on DST. People who complain act like there's no current reason for it. There was a reason back in the 60s when it started, and there are still reasons today. I think in the social media era we live in, this is just a product of our society, starting arguments about simply everything. Number two, college athletes gambling is going to become a problem. I heard a very popular college football writer recently say something like, college athletes aren't going to gamble because they're getting nil money. Are you kidding me? It all goes back to Mr. Burns saying, quote, yes, yeah, Smithers, I'd trade it all for just a little more. Oh, yeah, no, the nil money will be seed money for these college kids to launch larger quasi-gambling-related syndicates or perhaps play bookmaker themselves to take action off the books in charge of VIG. I wouldn't put anything past the entrepreneurial spirit of college kids with a few bucks jingling and jangling in their pockets. Now to the big point of his email. He says, more importantly, Zabe, on Scott and Solly, I do subscribe and I do pay the $5 a month for your Fridays only because of Scott and Solly, who live there most of the year. Now, maybe your schedule hasn't worked out lately, or maybe you're phasing them out. No, I'm not phasing them out, but my schedule has been whacked. You, Scott and Solly, take me back to your national show. It was the best radio show, in my opinion, ever. Your recent slant towards Wisconsin sports is understandable since that's your market now, but hear me out. Keep Scott and Solly on Fridays, and please give them more time. I'd get so frustrated in the fall when you would do picks for 30 minutes, and then Mr. X gets 45 minutes to spit out absolutely nothing. When you do the Daily Zabe-type stories with Scott and Solly, that is when you guys are at your best. One missed example of this would have been to talk about the Oscar Pistorius story of him recently getting released from prison. Solly would have been all over that, and it would have been hilarious. I didn't even bother to download the last 2 weeks. I'm just relaying my own thoughts on what your Friday Pay podcast should be. As always, hashtag more Solly, less Murray, Pat in the 912. Pat, I feel you, and I'm going to give you the straight shot on the whole situation with Scott and Solly. I have been doing a home and home with them every week. For them coming on my paid podcast on Fridays, I come on their Patreon-supported podcast on Tuesdays. It's been fine for the most part. However, I'm getting to the point in life where I really, really would like to slim down to not doing anyone else's podcast except for on the one-off type occasions. I don't really want to be in the business of home and homes because even though you say, well, I mean, that's a cheap price to pay if they're doing your pod and you're doing their pod, did I say that right? If you're doing theirs and they're doing yours, it's just talking, right? Well, 3 hours a day in the mornings on Wisconsin radio, an hour a day doing podcasts, doing the Zabecast, add another out, golf shows an hour. There's just a lot of stuff. So I've been wrestling with the whole, okay, do I offer them money just to say, look, I'm going to buy myself out of Tuesdays. do I have them just for football season? I've asked myself, do I aspire to try to really dig in and book some interesting, off-the-beaten-path, different people for Friday's paid Zabecast? Do I get rid of the paid Friday and just make it so that if you subscribe, we knock out all the commercials? I think that has some popular support out there. So there's a lot of things I'm wrestling with. But in this case in particular, you know, schedules get tough. Like, I was ready to come back this week, do the home and home, Tuesday with them, Friday, or Thursday, Friday with me. And Scott had a dental appointment, which is fine, that interrupted our normal taping on Friday morning or on Thursday morning. And I said, you know what? I got so much going on right now. I just got back from Arizona, vacation, Mexico before that. I need another week to sort this out. So we're not going to do it again this week. Now, I hope to deliver a Cracker Jack sparkling podcast on Friday for you paid subscribers. But I almost kind of think that maybe if I just went to the whole, hey, subscribe, and then you don't have to listen to commercials, that's the way to go. Because the perception is Fridays are extra wham-bam special. And in the past, they kind of had been with a beefier lineup of football stuff. But sometimes I don't or can't get anyone that is, wow, on a Friday. I couldn't get Joe Rogan, sorry. And so people feel perceptively, not cheated, but they feel perceptively like they're not getting their money's worth. I get that. So who knows what I'll do. There is zero beef whatsoever with Scott and Solly. It's a scheduling issue. It is a workload issue. It is a lot of issues. But I'm trying to work it out. So there you go, Patrick. Thank you for chiming in. And have I answered all your questions? As they say in the customer service business. Have I answered all your questions? Maybe not, but now you know where I stand. Kirk Cousins, new deal in Atlanta. Wow. Once again, Kirk Cousins has pa-pow, broken the bank open. 4 years, $180 million, $50 million signing bonus, guarantee of $90 million the first 2 years, and $100 million guaranteed total. He is 35 years old, coming off a torn Achilles. He has won a total of, let me look at his playoff stats. I know quarterback wins are not a stat. He has not been a quarterback anyone swoons over. He has not been any kind of unicorn. In a league that constantly is in the hunt for unicorns, he ain't it. He's not a donkey, but he's just a solid quarter horse. Let's see here. Playoffs. Adjusted passing. Advanced passing. Compare Kirk to... Oh, there's the tab for playoffs. Kirk Cousins has won one playoff game in his career. With this new contract with the Atlanta Falcons, which again, the top line number, ignore that, it's fake, 180. The guarantee is for 100. He's probably got two decent years left. The cost of a good QB1, and he is a good QB1, not capital G great, not a unicorn. He is a good QB1. The cost of a good QB1 is $40 to $50 million. And that's right where he sits. It's the cost of these things. Now, I'm not saying the Vikings screwed up here. I think it was a logical, if not painful, thing for the Vikings to do. They couldn't be justified in spending that money because they have a declining and out-of-whack team sitting there around him. They tried to get it together and make a run at something with Kirk there, delivering excellent level quarterbacking in the 6 years he was in Minnesota. But guess what? They couldn't figure it out. Or things happened, like their O-line got decimated. But Kirk has delivered in terms of the stats year after year after year. He was on pace for 36 touchdowns this year, his most ever, against just five picks. He has gone 29 over 14, 33 over 7, 35 over 13, 26 over 6, and 30 over 10 walking backwards in his stay in Minnesota. He has thrown for 4,500, 4,200, 4,200, 4,200, 4,000, 4,900, 4,100 yards in his career, going back to his final 3 years in Washington when he was the starter. Most importantly, look at his games and games started. Starting in his fourth year, 16-16, 16-16, 16-16, 16-16, 15-15, 16-16, 17-17, and then this year, 8-8. Now, they did start the 17-game schedule, I want to say 4 years ago, so I might have missed one in there. Bottom line is this. He starts. He is a serious quarterback. He is a maniacally grinding, super nerd quarterback. He's not weird. He's not a diva. You never have to wonder, what is he in this for? He just loves playing football. And I love the fact that he has now made $331 million guaranteed in his NFL career. I love Kirk because he beat the dipshits in Washington, Danny Boy and his beer-guzzling stooge, Bruce Allen. The Redskins were so dumb. I'll never forget the day that they couldn't hold on to Kirk after he said no to back-to-back franchise tags or long-term deals when he got tagged twice, and he waited him out. The day that happened, Chris Cooley, who I was doing an afternoon show with, and of course had inside connections with the highest reaches of the organization, both Dan and Bruce and others, showed me a photo. We were in Minnesota at the Super Bowl, of all places, showed me a photo on his phone of one of the staffers at Redskins Park taking the Kirk Cousins framed photo off the wall that night with a big old shit-eating grin on his face, like, ha-ha, yeah, we're letting this loser go. He was the best quarterback they've had in 20-plus years. And unless whoever they take at number two is better, he's going to be the best they're going to have. And it's so funny to think this is how dumbass franchises think. The Vikings were right to not match this deal. The Falcons, meanwhile, look at them like shit. We have had dog crap quarterbacking, but we got talent pouring out our ears right now. We've got Drake London. We got Bijan Robinson running the ball. Hell, they might throw now to Kyle Pitts. Imagine if Kyle Pitts becomes an absolute monster with Kirk Cousins. It is not impossible. I'm happy for Kirk. He's a good guy who beat the Redskins, who has played the system perfectly. He is a humble, grinding nerd. Kirko Chains gets paid again. And that compared to Russell Wilson getting a one-year deal for $1.4 million with the Pittsburgh Steelers is why it doesn't pay to be a weirdo and a diva and a guy who seemingly is distracted with all this other stuff to become, you know, quarterback incorporated and have your hands all over the place when you're still trying to play this game, which will humble the best of players. Focus on the football while you're playing the football, and teams love that a lot more than they do a guy who thinks, oh, I've made it already. I'm working on my clothing line, my drink line, this, that, the other. Football, first and foremost. And there's more to come. I don't have a full recap of what has transpired on Monday. I taped this at 6 p.m., but more shoes will drop in the coming hours and days, and we'll talk more about it tomorrow. Coming up, Gary Williams, a guy I've known for a long time, back when I was in Charlotte working at WFNZ. He succeeded me doing the morning show down there at WFNZ, went to SiriusXM, Mad Dog Radio, then went to the Golf Channel, did a ton of stuff there. He is now podcasting and has a website called Five Clubs, which is a really good golf-related media venture that I recommend to anybody. But he has another side to him, and that is the North Carolina Tar Heel psycho side. And we will hear from that next. You are listening to the Zabecast. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. Let's just see if Gary is standing by his phone.
Steve-O.
Oh, you made a big mistake. You picked up the phone. Big mistake. We are live. Anything you say, Kennedy, will be used against you in a court of public opinion for shit takes, but I know they're not going to be shit. They're going to be good. I'm sitting here watching the waiver wire in the NFL, and I see Saquon Barkley is an Eagle now, and I know you're a Giant fan. And I'm just, can I get a vibe check with you, Gary, first?
You know what? Steve, I'm not trying to be pragmatic about this.
You know, we're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't help you just hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. This according to a recent Indeed survey. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Just go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the show by saying you heard about it right here on this podcast. Indeed.com/Zabe. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But I'm totally okay with it. I hate the fact that a guy who was a total pro and is a total pro is going to probably end his career as an Eagle. I would have rather him gone to the Texans. But come on, they cannot pay him. It was a mistake to draft him where they drafted him. I like him. I love seeing him in the uniform. I hated the fact that he got hurt right when he was ascending.
Right.
But
he's going to Satan's team. So
correct.
You know.
Yeah, and that sucks.
Good luck there.
Correct. Exactly. And again, these guys have got to max out their dollars, especially at that position. I would have said, well, he's not going to go to Philly because I know how much he loved being a Giant. But come on. Guy's going to make as much as he can make. It doesn't break my heart. Look, he was not the difference between them being really good or average. He was a good player on a really ordinary team. Good for him. Good riddance.
Yeah. Now, if you get rid of Daniel Jones, that's a whole nother story. But I called you today because I could see and hear you in my mind's eye on Saturday night. Just cussing and fist pumping and fuck yeah as your North Carolina Tar Heels took it to the Dukies yet again. See, people, I, with Gary, went to a Duke Carolina game at Cameron Indoor. In what year was
it? Always think about it. Every year was 1998. Carolina had, I thought they had the best starting five, and God love Bill Guthridge, but Bill thought they had the best starting six. So he would rotate Maktar Jai every five games. One of those guys would sit. So he's literally sitting either, you know, Vince Carter, Antoine Jameson, Shimon Williams, who had a phenomenal year that year. Adam Okalaja. They were really good. And when they started Maktar Jai, when he started him in San Antonio in the national semi against Utah, I said, they're losing. And they did. in horrific fashion. But yeah, Carolina was up 16, Steve, in the second half.
Feb, you and me, DJ Stout, Jim Lloyd.
And it was like being inside of an incinerator. We were in the second to last row in the end zone, and it was a glorious, there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
There's nothing like it. But here's what I'll never forget. Getting in the car to drive home, my tail between my legs because they melted down. Brennan Haywood could make a couple free throws late to seal it. And we're listening to the Duke post game because you, in your infinite wisdom, had adopted the Dukies. And we're listening to Kay's post game, and he proceeds to say these words: Wojo's performance was the greatest one-point performance I've ever seen. Really? What's the competition?
He was really special, you know, he was really. So wait, you're saying this was 98 because I'm looking at the headline, yes. Gary. Number one Duke crumbles as Jameson scores 35.
February 6, 1998.
Okay. So that was the first of the two.
Correct.
The rematch was at Cameron Indoor. And it needs to be noted that my good friend, and I haven't talked to him in forever, I need to reach out, Jim Lloyd, had connections to Duke tickets. That's the only reason we were able to get into that 9,000 seat.
You are correct, sir.
Bandbox that is Cameron Indoor. And so, on the ride home, you were seething because of the loss. And we're just sort of like, la, 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 la. And when Gary said I stupidly adopted the Blue Devils, that's because when I moved to Charlotte, started working at WFNZ, I had to pick a team. I decided I'm going to pick a team. And I picked Duke, which was a front runner choice. And B, I didn't realize how little of a footprint they had in the Carolinas compared to UNC, compared to NC State, even compared to Wake. Like, Duke is the nation's team. It's not Carolina's team.
No, you're right. It's not. Now, look, they were already a national power. He was throwing haymakers with Dean. Now, to Dean's credit, after Kay got the two titles in 91 and 92, Dean answered in 93. And if you look at the end of Dean Smith's career against Duke, he won a lot of games. But you're right. He was a massive national figure, but Duke's program was loathed by people in the state of North Carolina because it was, the student body was all transplants. It was the University of New Jersey, Durham campus.
and you say and that so, as a Jerseyite yourself,
yes,
for the
absolutely.
Record. Yeah, I shouldn't
absolutely.
Say, it's not like there were no Duke fans, but it was a shockingly small pocket, as I came
correct.
To realize. And then you had things like our friend Mark Packer with his ACC note card, which was him keeping meticulous track on pen and paper with the foul calls during the course of an ACC season, and then pointing out how, my, look at this, Duke has made more free throws than their opponents have even attempted, insinuating like they're getting all the calls, which they kind of do, but then they're also, again, a better team. So that profile could be applied to a lot of programs.
Of course it can. And I wonder where the infamous ACC index card, as he called it, is now that Mark is on the ACC network.
Oh yeah, exactly. Next time I have him on, I'm going to say, so Pac-Man, where did that go? Do you talk about that or not? That's so funny. So anyway, that was a great trip up there, despite your heels losing. And it was the only game you and I went to, I believe, at Cameron Indoor, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the only one, and I will say this:
How many have you been in your lifetime to Cameron Indoor?
Cameron Devils? I've been to four Carolina Duke games in Cameron. I've probably been to somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 12 games in Cameron. I was at Duke Carolina in 92 in the Smith Center when Duke was. They were rock stars. You remember? I mean, at a time when the best players in college basketball were playing 4 years, not because of NIL, because the best players.
That's how it was.
Large, especially at Duke and Carolina, were playing 2, 3, 4 years. And Leitner, that was his senior year, and they were rock stars. Him and Hurley, and obviously Grant Hill, Brian Davis, and they came rolling into Carolina. And Carolina had Montross and Brian Reese and Derek Phelps and Pat Sullivan, and they were an emerging, ascending Carolina team. And that was the night that Montross got the cut under his eye.
Right.
One of the great images in the history of the series.
Bleeding and Carolina won that game. Right.
Correct. Yeah, and I remember running to Franklin Street after that game, and Montross actually, they back then, you know, they still, if they beat Duke, they still run to Franklin Street, but they used to literally build a bonfire at the corner of Franklin and Columbia, and it was just, I mean, you know, that's the way things were 30 years ago, and I'll never forget him saying in front of all of these, this huge throng of fans, I knew we could do it. We're going all the way. Now they didn't, right. But that group did the following year. So look, college basketball is been marginalized. But I will say that Duke Carolina is still, it's the only
it's
thing.
Still it. It still has it, man.
It still has it.
Like Auburn, Alabama in football, as yes. We saw this year. Even when Auburn is down, it's like weird shit happens and they rise up and make it a game. So back in the day, Gary and I and a couple of the knuckleheads from the station, WFNZ in Charlotte, we had a traded out RV, which I don't think we owned it, but they gave it to us, stupid of the RV company. And our boss, Mike Kellogg, had it wrapped in station colors. So you couldn't miss it with this teal and black WFNZ. And we got some guy to volunteer to drive it. He was like a listener, right? He had no license or certification to drive it. Who was our driver? Do you remember?
I oh my gosh, I can see him. If he was walking down my street right now, I would absolutely be able to ID him. He was just a listener, I believe. He was a listener. I don't know
it's
what
like,
his
hey,
rap
who wants
was.
To, we're going to be drinking in this thing, so who wants to drive us up to Chapel Hill? Who wants to drive us to Raleigh-Durham? So we
you
weren't a lot
You remember
the
name of the RV, right? You remember the name that we gave the RV?
No, what do we call it?
Oh my gosh, I'm disappointed in you. The Big Unit. And that thing, it's so funny you bring that up because I was having this conversation very recently with somebody about the days of the Big Unit, and Packer used to take that to his Southern Fried football games.
Right.
I actually went on one of those trips for Florida State in Gainesville, and coming back in the middle of the night, I don't know how we didn't flip that thing like three or four times. It was so dangerous, but we did one of the promotions we had was with the Hornets and the men's club. And we would go and we would at, you know, 5:30, we'd swing by the men's club and they would load us up with a bunch of fillets and double stuffed potatoes and a half a dozen entertainers. And we would take, I don't know, four or five listeners onto the Big Unit. We'd park it right on One Hive Drive. It was the most irresponsible thing ever.
Yeah, I was gone at that point, but yeah, that sounds about right. And
you,
I don't know.
You were?
I'm not sure what ended.
But you'll appreciate this.
Yeah.
My favorite memory was Dave Jagler, who is the consummate broadcast professional.
Dave Jagler,
current
voice of the Washington Nationals, and has called a World Series victory. Jags is awesome.
He's got a World Series ring.
Yes.
So he's on this RV, and one of the adult entertainers is shaking her moneymaker in his grill, and she does one too many pirouettes and slips, cracks her head on the side of the table in the RV and is knocked unconscious. And I'm certain she's dead. And I'm looking at him.
It's like a Weekend at Bernie situation. yeah, good time. So we went up to, I think you went with us to the Dean Dome for UNC versus UNC Charlotte.
Yes.
When Bobby Lutz was getting it cooking at UNC Charlotte, great guy. And, you know, UNC Charlotte didn't really, they hung in there, as I recall, but it just wasn't enough. And I loved the experience of being there. Totally different vibe, obviously, than Cameron Indoor. We also took it up to the old Reynolds Coliseum at NC State before they moved into their new building. And that was a trip because, of course, we had end zone seats. And that building was used like for, I don't know, like equestrian events or something. So it was as long as like, you know, a rectangle, and the end zone seats were a good 200 feet away from the basket.
Yeah, Zabe, I'll tell you, I was lucky enough when I started doing a little bit of play-by-play on television. I did an NIT game, play-by-play game with Bucky Waters, and it was Sidney Lowe's first season at NC State. And I'd never been to Reynolds. It had great history. And obviously in the 70s with the tartan floor and David Thompson, but I didn't realize that Reynolds Coliseum was really the inspiration of it was not architecturally, but the inspiration was Madison Square Garden and the idea of building a building at that time that could attract massive events like the Garden did. And so to your point about the way it was designed, it looked like where you would go to see a national rodeo final.
Yeah,
I'm not
it
joking.
Says
that's
it was
the way that it was.
The arena was built to host a variety of events, including agricultural expositions and NC State basketball games. It now serves as home to all ROTC activities and still several Wolfpack teams, including women's hoops, women's volleyball, and other events.
It's an awesome building, and I'll tell you, because it was Sidney Lowe's first year, they had bottomed out with Les Robinson, and he wore the red jacket that night, and I remember saying on the air, this feels like a religious revival. They thought they had their guy because
know.
He was part of that 83 national championship team. They were young. They got into the NIT. They got to play more games together, and obviously it didn't work for Sidney, but I will say that, you know, you go back to the heyday of when State was great with Valvano and they were playing in Reynolds, and Carolina was still, until 1985, when they moved in the Smith Center, they were in Carmichael. Carmichael, Cameron, and Reynolds. You talk about three bandboxes that you went into and were just, you know, there was no air conditioning. Everything was, except for Reynolds, wasn't so much vertical. The fans were on top of you. That was, you know, great teams, great coaches, legendary coaches, and amazing atmospheres.
Yeah, good times. And of course now the new ACC with these grotesque add-ons, Cal and SMU, it's just, it breaks your heart. It broke my heart when Maryland left for the Big Ten money.
Yes.
Because even though they were one of the newer, you know, they were one of the OGs, obviously, but, you know, it was just one of these things where you're like, well, fuck, you know, like shit that used to be good is not as good anymore. And it's just getting worse. So I don't know what to say anymore,
right.
But I mean, as long as it's still Duke and Carolina, we got something, Gary.
Yeah, you're right. And gosh, you just add Cole Fieldhouse, which again, another, you consider the fact that you know, they had a national championship game in that building. And certainly
one of
Lefty
the most,
just passed recently.
One of the most important games ever
in
played. History, right?
Yes, absolutely right. You're right. I will tell you that I will not be jetting up when they play the ACC tournament in Brooklyn for an opening round Cal Syracuse game in the ACC tournament.
Oh my God. Is that next?
What a sad day.
I know. Is that next year?
Next year. Yeah.
In Brooklyn.
Next year.
Oh my
God. No. They are, I'm saying hypothetically, as a matter of fact, I believe after this year, they're in DC this year, which again,
right?
Really, they're in DC for the ACC tournament. They're going to be, I believe they're in Charlotte three of the next 4 years. And Charlotte makes complete sense. Greensboro, there's great history, certainly there. It's not a great place for all these various fan bases to go because it's still, you know, kind of like a bedroom community compared to some of these markets you can go to. But you know, the ACC tournament has gone to Brooklyn. And who knows, it may go back again. And when it does, and Cal and you know, Pitt are playing an opening round ACC tournament game.
Oh, God.
Good Christ.
Oh, God. 1966 national championship game between Texas Western and the all-white Kentucky Wildcats at Cole Fieldhouse, one of the absolute breakthrough games in sports and racial history in this country, and certainly legendary. And I was lucky enough to see a game in Cole Fieldhouse, and I could probably still smell it right now if I close my eyes. It's that old gymnasium smell, you know, the mixture of linseed oil on the hardwood, a lot of sweat, dust.
Well, I'll tell you another very, you know, up until recently, when we had a 1-16, which that 1-16 was in Charlotte when Virginia lost to UMBC.
Right.
That if you remember, Syracuse as a 2 lost to Richmond as a 15. That was at Cole Fieldhouse.
Oh.
And that was for a handful of 2s and 2-15s. That was, if I'm not mistaken, after they went to 64, I believe that was the first 15 to beat a 2 when they instituted the seating system was 64. That was at Cole Fieldhouse.
Yeah. All right. Quickly, your thoughts on Carolina's chances to cut down the nets.
You know, I think they're reasonably good. I will say this about them. I think that they are, I'm not going to say, look, they're susceptible to getting bounced in the second. I think most teams are, with the exception of probably Houston, Connecticut. I wouldn't even necessarily say Purdue. Here's the thing I would say about Carolina in terms of a matchup situation. Watching them early in the year, they played Connecticut and they played Kentucky. And both of those teams got anything they wanted offensively. And Carolina is actually a pretty decent defensive team. They are grizzled. And I mean, my God, Armando Bacot and Cormac Ryan are eligible for pensions. They're both in their mid-20s. They're a very old team, which has served them well. I they're not wildly athletic. So yeah, I mean, they're certainly capable. Is they have a very good shooting guard who can handle, and in the tournament, as we've seen, and I'm not, you know, putting him on the level of some of these guys that teams have ridden to championship, but RJ Davis he's very good. And he's the kind of guy that can get you, as he did about 2 weeks ago, 40 in a night, setting a Smith Center record for the most points scored by a player in that building, which is saying something. Yeah, they are, but they're not as good as Connecticut. They're not as good as Kentucky. They're not as good as Houston. I believe they are exactly where they're going to be in the tournament. They're on the 2 line. And if things break right, they could absolutely be in the Final Four. They're not a championship team. I'd be surprised if they were there that Monday night.
Quickly on golf, Gary has started and runs the excellent website and podcast called Five Clubs. It is not based on just five clubs in your golf bag. It's on 5 of the most influential private clubs that have shaped the history of golf. Remind me which 5 those are again, because none of them have invited me.
Yeah, they are the reason we chose the 5. It's the 5 that were the original construct of the charter of the United States Golf Association,
which was
Port Country Club,
yep.
St. Andrews on the Hudson, Chicago Golf Club, Shinnecock Hills, and the Country Club at Brookline. And our point of doing that was we liked the name, but also we saw ourselves, like they did, as being aspirational, hopefully making a contribution to the game. So that's the genesis of the name.
Yeah, check out the podcast there. A lot of good golf content. I have to end with this real quick. I know when you were with Golf Channel, you had the opportunity to get very close with Arnold Palmer. And I know how dear he is to your heart. Tell me you were not horrified to see Rory, a guy that I have loved over the years, demolish a tee marker at Arnie's place in frustration. What's going on?
Yeah, it's a very wonky time. And you know, I know, look, you have a golf show. You and I have played a fair amount of golf together. It's been too long. And I know how invested you are in,
oh,
in not
I used
only
to
playing
get
the game, but following the game. And I know you're incensed by where we find professional golf. You loathe live.
It's stupid. But
it's a really weird time.
It is. And I think Rory is talking too much. I wish I could put a gag order.
He can't help himself. I'm with
know.
You. I was just having this conversation an hour ago with somebody about Jay Monahan's presser tomorrow, and Jay's gonna take some punches tomorrow because he's been holed up in the bunker.
Oh, that's right.
And tomorrow's not going to be a good day for him. I'm sorry, it's just not. But subsequently, Rory as well, he can't help himself. He's recused himself from the board, but he is He is a curious mind, and he's a righteous dude, so he's going to share his thoughts, and he really needs to just focus on the task at hand, which is trying to cross the Rubicon and win a green jacket. And the fact is, Steve, is that his first four starts this year, he's driving it like a stallion, which he historically always does. But the balance of his game is not average. It's bad. His iron play is poor. He's outside the top 130 in strokes gained approach. His putting is outside the top 150.
And worse yet, he might have fixed Scheffler's putting by suggesting a mallet, which is the gentlemanly thing to do, but shit. Yeah, good luck beating Scheffler now if he really has fixed his putting.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, God.
You're right.
All right, Gary, good to connect as always. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
Thanks. Let's end on this. So it really is the end for Deadspin. After the story they reported back in November of the young boy with what they claimed was, quote, blackface, but in reality was just a photo that looked that way because it was a profile shot. Other photos of the young boy who was wearing also a Native American headdress was wearing red on one half of his face and black on the other. They published a story in which the headline was, "The NFL needs to speak out against the Kansas City Chiefs fan in blackface, comma, native headdress." Well, number one, he wasn't in blackface, and Deadspin knew this, but printed the story anyway. And on top of that, they didn't know the kid was actually of Native American heritage, even though he looks like your average run-of-the-mill suburban white kid. So, wrong on two fronts. And of course, his family demanded a retraction and apology because they were, of course, getting death threats, and Deadspin basically ignored them or at best doubled down and said, well, we weren't really trying to make him the focus. We were talking about how the NFL has historically had problems with certain minority blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? The bill came due today. Headline. The entire staff at Deadspin has been sent an email saying the company has been purchased by a European entity and all of them are being laid off by the new ownership. Oh, wow. That is a dagger right there, but one that doesn't make me sad whatsoever. It was a bullshit hit piece that was just meant to generate clicks and hatred. It was the furthest thing from even, you know, basic journalism, much less supposedly better than basic journalism. And they couldn't admit their mistake because it wasn't a mistake, because they wanted to do this. They're like, oh, good, look at this. Perfect. Take that photo that only shows them from the side. It looks like blackface. We will print a story and the usual suspects will go nuts. Well, now apparently Deadspin realized we're prop because they're getting sued by the family. And there's a pretty strong case for defamation or libel. I forget which one is spoken. Slander, defamation, libel, three of them. One's spoken, one's written. The other one is, I don't know. It's something. I got a pretty strong case. So nobody's sad about this, but my God, few people dunk on their rivals more than Dave Portnoy, El Prez, for Barstool, which has become everything Deadspin used to be. Deadspin used to be fun. Deadspin used to be the place you could go for a ha-ha and a story about Brett Favre sending dick pics to Jen Sturger with the Jets. It used to be the place that didn't mind pissing people off. It used to be way back in the blogging days before anyone vlogged or before anyone podcasted. It used to be must-read stuff. Deadspin. That original Deadspin. The Deadspin where my friend Drew McGarry, who I haven't talked to in a long time, and sadly Drew is very liberal and he's gone very woke, but I still enjoyed his company back in the day. You know, he would write some of the most hilarious, scathing, and politically incorrect stuff. But I think he realized, holy shit, my career as a writer is going to be in jeopardy if I don't pivot and pivot hard. And so he's written, I believe he wrote a piece apologizing for all the things that he had written before that was inappropriate and politically incorrect. And I just, it broke my heart because I'm like, oh, fuck. Drew was so funny. We would have him on 980, Andy and I, from time to time. But that said, Deadspin is now dead. Barstool is much more like what they used to be, and it is financially thriving since Portnoy bought it back from Penn Gaming for a dollar. And they're going to have a new gambling arrangement with DraftKings. So, I mean, wow. But nobody dunks on enemies quite like Dave Portnoy. So here he is cutting a pop the champagne video from his pool raft in his mansion in Florida with his newly adopted dog, Miss Peaches, padding around on the pool deck.
Listen, even I'm getting confused. Even I'm getting confused. How many times can I pop a bottle for the same goddamn company? How many times can I kill Deadspin? How many times can Julie DeCaro lose her goddamn job? It seems like infinity. But here we are, once again, new bottle of champagne floating around. New Hey, Miss Peaches. Hi, Miss Peaches. Get her out so I can go back to business, boys. Deadspin, out of business, bought, everyone fired for the 90th straight time. This is just kicking a dead-ass dog. But you know what? I'm not beyond it. There we go. To Deadspin, everybody getting fired again. Those motherfuckers just don't get it. Being miserable, hating life, never laughing, it's never going to pay the bills. See you motherfuckers on the employment line again.
Did he mean unemployment?
Victory!
You don't have to like Dave Portnoy or Barstool to at least admit, man, oh man, when he dunks on a vanquished rival or nemesis in the media business, nobody does it better. And that is a wrap for me today. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Gary Williams for picking up the phone. Dum-dum, you should have just let it go to voicemail. Instead, I got him today, so that was fun. Thanks for listening. Have a great Tuesday, and we will see you next time. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.